Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
G'day and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, as together we're reimagining the future of education, one inspired story at a time. And I would like to welcome back our beautiful guest, Sabel, who is from the Netherlands and a developmental psychologist whose recent PhD explored the inner landscape of teenage motivation. And today, this is what we're going to dive into, a little bit more about what she managed to find out and investigate around teenagers. I mean, it's the big mystery, isn't it? Everyone's trying to work out what motivates them, particularly in today's society. So welcome back, Sabel.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me again.
I know. I love the conversation that we had around talking around universities and academia and how it's all set up. But I'm really interested today and curious around what is it? What did you discover around teenage motivation that traditional psychology might have overlooked? Or what's the path? You know, where are we at with this?
Yeah, it's okay. It's much. So,
One
my
step
head is
at
running
a time.
around again. Yeah, exactly. So when I'm just focusing on my thesis, is what I noticed is we see this decline in school motivation during adolescence, which is really concerning for, I think, many. People, and that's why we really want to know, okay, how can we motivate them? How can we make sure that it's that our teenagers are doing well? Because we also know, based on prior literature, that school success during adolescence can also really shape later success later in life. So it feels I think to all of us, like it's really important to motivate teenagers. So that's why I started my study. And what I noticed is that, and that's also based a bit on the structure of academia, is that we just focus on one little aspect and then say, okay, we find that this little aspect influences motivation, so this is what we should do. We should focus on this specific part. But in the end, that specific part isn't really doing much, because it's just one of the many, many things that is influencing motivation. So what I did with my thesis is I wanted to create like a book with multiple perspectives on teenage motivation. So I looked in each paper from another perspective. So in the first paper, I looked at it from a societal perspective. So what is the idea society has about the teenage brain specifically? And how does it shape the behavior of teenagers? And in the second paper, I looked at, okay, and how is the social context, the social perspective influencing the teenagers? So in that specific paper, I looked at how different types of social reward are like experienced as more or less rewarding during adolescence. So what is the trajectory of each specific type of reward? And then I actually wrote two papers on the personal perspective. And I looked at mindset. So how is the mindset of the teenagers influencing their behavior, and especially behavior on effort and on how they deal with setbacks? And finally, I also looked into the neural perspective. So what is happening in the brain? Can we see like maybe areas that are more or less involved in motivation? And together, all those papers give like an overview of, yeah, just a little bit more of an overview, because I also miss like so many other things. But what is happening in motivation during adolescence? And what is also important to mention before maybe we can go into more detail into these papers is in the Netherlands, we have a schooling system in which we have primary school until the age of 12. And until or during primary school, all the adolescents, all the children are in one class with one teacher, or sometimes two teachers when they work part-time, for the full year. So they have their own classroom, their own teachers, their own peers. But the moment they go to secondary school, so from age 12 to 16 to 18 years old, they will have a totally different structure in which adolescents are within one class, but they have to move classrooms for each lesson, and each lesson will have like another teacher. So in and also later during, but let's focus for now, because my thesis was focused on first year secondary school students. Let's just focus on this class who is just but they have to move, and they have so many different teachers and so many different subjects, and it's really different from what they experienced thus far. And also adding to that, like context change, it's more focused on getting good grades for all those different subjects. And also, they have like all those like bodily changes, like hormones that are changing them, and they used to know who they were and how they felt, and it's all different now. It's like in this first year of secondary school, there are so many changes. And we as adults usually focus on, okay, we have to make sure that they are motivated. But is that really the most important question to ask during this transition? Yeah. So that's like the outline of my thesis.
Wow, it
Yeah.
sounds like lots of different layers.
Yeah.
Lots of different layers. And I really love that this, I mean, with your unique perspective, with your own childhood, different religions and different cultural backgrounds just within your one
Yeah.
family, I can imagine that this would have been deep learning for you. Going through this process as well with your thesis.
Yeah, and like during my own adolescence, I wasn't really aware. I was just going because I thought that's what was expected of me. But looking back, I feel like, oh, okay, it really taught me a lot in a sense of, okay, I know now what I can do when I don't feel like the passion to do it, kind of feeling. And I can achieve a lot with that. So beware when I use my passion as well. Yeah.
I love to call it my highest excitement. If I'm following my highest
Yeah.
excitement, everything just seems to flow.
Yeah.
And these days I'm old enough to be able to say, well, if it's not my highest excitement, do I really want to do it? Probably not. But unfortunately, we don't all have that privilege to do that at this stage.
No.
All right, can we circle back, because you said you had so many different layers. Can we go back to the one where you talked about first, which was the societal perspective? Because our
Yeah, that's an
society feels like it's
interesting one.
really shifting globally. There's just so much unrest and change and questioning, and just so much is going on. So I'm fascinated to hear, how did you even try to measure that motivation from that perspective? Like, what did you do?
Yeah, what we did was we asked both adolescents and adults who are in close contact with adolescents. So, for example, parents or teachers or like adults, to give their perspective on the teenage brain. And in Dutch, we use the word puberbrein. So puber for the teenage part and brein for the brain part. But puber in Dutch usually has like a more negative connotation. So when someone is sharing a story about their teenager and another person hears that, it's usually like, no, did he do that? Oh, it's a real puber. So puber is really used as something negative. So it's important to mention that as well, that we asked about the puberbrein, the teenage brain, for the translation, but it's more negative than neutral. So we asked about them, okay, what are the first three things that come to mind when you hear the word puberbrein? And we asked that for, okay, what were your thoughts or your associations? But we also asked, what do you think that your parents or adults think about the teenage brain? And we asked the adults, what do you think that teenagers would think about the teenage brain? So that's really, really interesting and really cool. And what we found is, yeah, for both groups, is that, yeah, most associations were negative. Like a lot, a lot. But there was a really big difference between the teenagers themselves and parents or adults. I'm trying to look for the, yes. So, even though, like, for teenagers, it was the biggest percentage to mention undesirable behaviors. It was like almost 20% of all the associations they mentioned were undesirable behavior. And to compare desirable behaviors was like only 3 to 4%. So it was a lot. But for parents, it was almost 40%. So they mentioned undesirable behaviors little less than half of the time. So we noticed that, okay, so the parents or the adults really have this negative view about teenage brain. And what was interesting is that also the adolescents thought that adults would have like more negative point of view about the teenage brain. So they could really see what was going on in the adults, while the adults couldn't really relate to the lower levels of undesirable behavior that adolescents were showing. So the point of view of society, or the sample that we use, of course, we cannot related to the whole the society as a whole, but is mostly negative around the teenage brain. So that was the first part of this paper, which is already very interesting. But the second part, we also thought, okay, can we maybe try to frame the adolescents to either think more positively or more negatively about the teenage brain, and then They will do certain tasks, such as a risk-taking task and a task on how they respond to failure, to see if that influence, like the framing, influences their behavior. And what we noticed it was that it didn't really influence the behavior directly. It wasn't true that adolescents who received positive framing behaved more positive, and that adolescents who behaved more negatively behaved more negative. But it was way more nuanced. So the adolescents who agreed with the positive statements showed more positive strategies when facing a setback. So only when they agreed with the framing statements, they showed behavior that was related to those statements, to the positive side, but also to the negative side. So when they agreed more with the negative statements, so these were other adolescents, but when they agreed more with the negative statements, they showed more risk-taking behavior. So it seems that like the point of view that is created over time plays an important role in their behavior eventually. So, for example, when you are an adolescent and you hear your parents tell you that you are lazy again, or stubborn, or irritating, all those undesirable behaviors, when you hear that time after time after time after time, then that is also the behavior that you are going to show. Well, if you hear your parents tell you, "Wow, you're such a creative being," because you are right now in a transitioning phase and your brain is still developing and things like that, you are probably also more likely to show more positive behavior because of that. So we cannot really frame by one instance or one time providing the right information about the teenage brain, for example. We cannot really frame adolescence with that, but that repetitive message is so important to their behavior. So we as a society have such an important role to play in teenage motivation, even though we keep pointing our finger towards them that they should change. We s should start a change and expressing a realistic picture of, adolescence and the teenage brain. Because if we only focus on one side, what do you expect they will do? Yeah,
Absolutely.
so that I really like this paper. I really
Oh,
like this,
you
yeah.
see,
So that's how we did it.
I'm in another country. I mean, I'm in Australia. I'm on the other side of the world, but this is really resonating because I see this all of the time, that self-fulfilling prophecy and
Yeah,
those
exactly.
subconscious programmed beliefs. Sometimes the children don't even know why they're acting the way they are. But it's their subconscious. They've absorbed everything that they're taking in, not to mention social media and movies. They've been
Yeah.
portraying teenagers as in a negative, the negative connotation's been there for a long time. So
Yeah.
I'm really loving that you've explored this.
Yeah, and we also notice that in the media, it's usually used to get the attention, and to warn parents and teachers and educators about the negative part of adolescence, and to, yeah. And it became such a big topic, in a negative way, that it's really How do I say that? It's almost, it isn't really a myth, but it's almost like a myth, like people believing this idea, which is partly true, but there is a whole other side that is missing still. And we should just, again, balance, balance this message as well. Yeah.
I agree. And you know, it reminds me of that whole it takes a village to raise a child. It's not just one parent or one
No.
teacher is responsibility. It's everybody's responsibility.
Exactly.
To keep in check, even just to be self-aware of the language that you're using and the body language that you're using,
Yeah,
I mean,
so true.
they pick up straight away whether you like them or not, or whether they resonate with you or not, just from your body language. And sometimes they can jump to conclusions with your body language. But it's that clear communication of saying what you mean and being authentic and real, you know, telling the truth doesn't seem to
Yeah.
be common knowledge these days. It's just not common to just say it how it is.
Yeah.
And that social threat that they're constantly scanning for, their brain is constantly scanning for, I really feel for them today because of the way that they're growing up, even online in that situation as
Yeah.
well. There's so many extra pressures for teenagers
Yeah.
today. Yeah, this is amazing. So then was there anything else from the societal perspective, or was it more the social that you then decided to dive into?
Yeah, so the next one was the social. For the societal part, we covered it all. And for the social, so that paper I wrote, like, let's see, it was published in 2019. So if I would be able to do this study again, I would also include like social media, but in that time, it wasn't as booming as it is now. But for the social, so okay, let's circle back a bit before diving in. Because what is motivation to start with? We all have an idea about what motivation is, right? But
Exactly, an intrinsic or
yeah,
external, like it's
exactly. And even when we look into the literature, there are like over 100, oh, I lost the word. Okay, I will just use other words, like explanations of what motivation is. So which one of the 100 explanations is then motivation? So what I used with my thesis is, okay, motivation should energize or de is an energizer or de-energizer of certain behavior. And in many theories, we find that there is a component of reward and a component of effort that is used, or like it's almost like which is creating this middle point, or whether it's the reward is large enough to put in all the effort that is needed to get the reward, and also the expectations of whether you will receive the reward or yeah, it's about energizing and de-energizing behavior, and about effort and reward. So, in the social perspective, we looked at social rewards, different types of social rewards. And it's usually thought that during adolescence, there is this heightened sensitivity towards social rewards. And that, so I expected for all those types of social rewards, we should see like a peak during adolescence, right? Because social rewards are peaking during adolescence, so we should see that. But actually, trying to look for it in my thesis as well, we found for only one of the types of social reward, which was admiration, so being liked by others, we saw this peak. But for the others, even like, for example, pro-social interactions, there wasn't this peak. It was just gradually increasing. Or sociability, which is okay, being let's see how I described it in my thesis. Enjoying group interactions, so being sociable. That was like stable during adolescence into adulthood. So all those different types of social rewards were also had their own trajectory, were and again, I find this more nuanced finding that it isn't like social rewards or social during adolescence, we have more social rewards. It really depends on the type of social rewards, also the age of the adolescents, whether it's more or less rewarding for them. But also sometimes there were differences between boys and girls, in which, for example, in the pro-social interactions, for girls, it was always more enjoyable or more rewarding to have those compared to boys, even though it was for both like high rewarding, but for girls even more. So it's really depending on different things, even though we have this idea that during adolescence, social rewards are important. So this again gives us another perspective on motivation, showing that all those nuances are determining whether a teenager is motivated or not, and the combination of all of those nuances instead of just focusing on that teenagers are more social and they like that better. So yeah, it's we are all amazing individuals with all of those unique qualities, and we tend to overlook them in science. And I really tried with my thesis to make it more real by showing, hello, we have multiple perspectives, and in all of those perspectives, we have all those nuances, which are so important, each and every one of them. And I wasn't even able to include all of them, of course. But with the ones I did include, it's already so much more complex than we try to make it. It's like this. We try to find a simple solution for a complex problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is complex because we're dealing with living beings, they're not robots. They are very unpredictable. And that's what we love about them because they can express and explore and all of these things that you're talking about. I'm just sitting here and marinating in the information because it has huge implications as an educator for the learning environment that you set up, particularly socially, and whether they're competing against each other or co-creating or even discussing with someone sitting next to them before they go to do a task. Something so simple can actually have a profound impact on their motivation. So I'm just loving this. Now, I know we're running out of time for today. Would you feel comfortable if we came back and had another interview, Sabelle? Because I really want to keep diving into
I have also so many interesting insights to share about the personal perspective as well. So let's do another one.
Wonderful. Okay, well, let's come back next week and do that
Little
as
teaser.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to us one more time this week. Until next week, explore, experience, express, go out and live learning.
for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding, and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.